Locking Amazing, the podcast all about deep and joyful learning from the team at Bird Brain Technologies. I'm your host, Sarah Fitzhenry, robot fairy godmother and all-around education enthusiast. Bird Brain is known for its groundbreaking technology for students, but this podcast is all about the grown-ups that guide and inspire them. And oh boy, do I have one of those grown-ups for you today. I won't say their name yet, but I will say that this person is an educator, a published author, an accomplished speaker, an edtech influencer, an advocate for girls in STEM and culturally responsive makerspaces and accessibility, and an infamous makey-makey expert. And I'm wondering if you can guess, I am here with the one and only Colleen Graves. Yay! Thanks so much for joining me,
hey,
Colleen.
Thanks for having me. I don't think I've ever had an intro that amazing before.
I feel like I should have been like tap dancing while I was doing it.
I feel like I should. I'm just blushing. You can't see.
We're both doing jazz hands, but you can't tell.
Jazz hands.
And if the sound is a little bit different today, it's because we are actually together in Austin, Texas. I'm here for South by Southwest EDU, and Colleen is from the area, so wonderfully came to meet me to chat. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I'm going to go right in. Can you tell us, in case any of our listeners are not familiar with you, which I very much doubt, but who are you and what is your teaching story?
All right. I am Colleen Graves, and I started teaching 20 years ago. I was an English teacher, and I taught reading and language arts, and the kids I worked with, I was like their mama bear, and I just loved them so much, and I worked so hard every day, and I had to keep moving schools because I had to get closer to my own house, and eventually I started a family and realized, like, I can't keep being this amazing teacher, so I'm gonna go get a library degree because I can be an amazing librarian. And somehow I thought that didn't mean the same amount of work, which obviously it is.
That is a common misconception.
Yeah,
I have
common
found
misconception.
Yeah.
Well, I actually knew because my husband was a librarian. Okay. I think I just was so busy. As a teacher, I was already presenting and I was teaching everyone how to use technology because, you know, that was like, I was there at the National Writing Project when Google Docs was still Writely.
Wow.
And I did like one of the first Google Docs with a bunch of English teachers, like with other people. And so then in 2007, when I was teaching high school and I was doing Google Docs with kids, like I'm one of the first teachers using this technology. Parents were mad at me for letting them do this. I thought it would be not applicable in their life at all.
Wow.
When they were freshmen in high school. And then, I mean, look at today. Who was right here? Was it me or?
I think that is a badge of honor that you get to wear.
Badge of honor. So anyway, I was like teaching people how to use Google Docs, and that was before they had all the add-ons. So then I would go and I would do professional development on like using, there was this thing, this octopus thing. I can't even remember what it's called now, that you could like put out before Google Sites was even a thing. So you could make, it was just crazy. Like I was doing all this technology training for teachers, and I was like, if I was a librarian, then that would be my job. Like it wouldn't be extra.
Yeah.
So that was really where that thought came from. And then in 2013, I started being a librarian, and I was like, man, makerspaces are cool. I want a makerspace in my library. I want my students to make stuff. I want them to be able to walk in and be like, I want to make a motorcycle. And you know, they can't make a motorcycle, but maybe they can make a prototype of a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. They can use Hummingbird robotics, and you know, there they go. They've actually made a working prototype of a motorcycle. So I started getting grants, and my principal was really supportive, and I had these Maker Mondays, and the kids were coming in. It was insane. Like, we did Spiro on top of the library shelves.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and I really had a big social media, and like you said, I started speaking about makerspaces. I fell in love with Makey Makey at a training. I was teaching other people how to use Scratch, and then at the end of the day, I went and played my first banana piano. And I still have a video of that.
That's how all good love stories start. I played my first banana piano.
I do. I like play it, and I think I use my face and like use my face to smack the bananas. And it was so silly. But I was like, this thing is really cool. And suddenly I went from being like someone who's teaching everyone about stuff to like someone who can make things. Like, and I have an art degree, so I didn't say that in the beginning, but I do have an art degree. So making things is already a passion of mine. But suddenly I was like, I can make really cool things with this product. And so I started making stuff with Makey Makey. You didn't know I was going to take this long to tell my teacher.
No, I love it. This is my, every question is my favorite question, but I love this.
So I started making things with Makey Makey, and it was really crazy. And I had met the team because we were, like I said, I was really active on social media. And I was like, will y'all Skype with my students? And they were like, yeah, we'll Skype. We'll get the whole team to Skype. And I thought this was something they did all the time. Right. But apparently I think my class might be the only class they ever.
Oh my gosh.
But they called in, and that was, you know, like I was doing a lot of stuff with Diana Rendina. She was in Florida. And so we were like librarian sisters, and we would have our maker kids call each other.
Yeah.
And so like we had this Makey Makey challenge going on, Diana and I. And so this was like, okay, I'm going to call the team, and the team's going to inspire the kids. And I just remember that Jay Silver called in, and he was wearing this big goofy hat. And the kids were like, how did you get to be so awesome? And he was like, what? How did you get to be so awesome? And he was like, you're all awesome. There's awesomeness in all of you. And I was like, this guy is cool.
Yeah.
And I ended up writing lesson plans for them. And then McGraw-Hill called me and asked me to write a makerspace book. And I was like, what is my life? Like,
yeah.
I didn't expect any of this. And so my husband and I wrote the Big Book of Makerspace Projects, and then we wrote 20 Makey Makey Projects for the Evil Genius, and we wrote a book with Diana called Design Challenges in the School Library Makerspace, which now I'm like, we should have just called it School Library Makerspaces, like, such a long title to get out, but we were
But being, Design Challenges is, yeah. I mean, oh, yeah. I hear that, and I'm like, ooh, Design Challenges.
We were being very academic at the time, so, yeah. Anyway, But yeah, so then, and I was doing all this public speaking and keynoting, but I really didn't like being gone all the time and keynoting. And I really did love making things and seeing kids make things that I make. So I ended up getting this job at Makey Makey, and now we get to make our own job titles. So I used to have a really funny one that I made up, and now I, again, trying to be more professional and the director of community and education and curriculum and all these things. But basically, I do 85,000 things. We're a very small team.
Mm-hmm.
And my main thing is to create the content that students will make and also guide teachers into helping kids become these amazing inventors. So it's a kind of a long, crazy loopy ride there.
Oh, fascinating story. And I had no idea that you had an art degree.
Oh, yeah.
And that you started as an English and writing teacher. Yeah. So how did you make your way into technology? You talked about how all of a sudden you were teaching technology as well as the things you needed to teach. But how did you get there? Have you always loved tech?
Yes, I think I'm a technology nerd. I mean, I have a degree in photography. I guess I just really saw that technology was engaging to students because, you know, you got to think back to like 2003 to 2007 and like we weren't really using anything but PowerPoint. And
some people started peddling the evil Google Docs.
So when I did Google Docs, I was like seeing that kids were really engaged because they were writing together. And it was like all of a sudden kids enjoyed collaborating, which I'd never seen before. They wouldn't do that before. And so I think I just was like, this is it. This is the jam, y'all. Like, you've got to do this and your kids will enjoy writing. And, I mean, I still saw that even as a librarian, we started using like Flipgrid, formerly known as Flipgrid. So I should say Flip.
Now Flip. Yes.
No, formerly known as Flipgrid. I remember a similar thing. Like you did Flipgrid with kids and they were like, suddenly they were passionate when they're speaking about whatever they're talking about.
Because so different.
Recording themselves in a tiny box. And the same thing with Makey Makey. I was doing Makey Makey and Scratch in the library for poetry, and I taught poetry for like 10 years, and usually it would be like, and this did that, you know, and when I did Scratch and they recorded their own voices, suddenly they had tone and mood and excitement and things were amazing. So I was like, this is really cool. Like, this is a technology that can engage the students, but also, like, continue them on their path of, like, English or whatever. To me, that's what was the coolest thing is you could put it in any classroom. You could do it with any content.
And that's an answer I haven't heard before, is that you saw it as a tool to take them deeper into the core content that they were already engaging with.
Mostly that it actually made them engage with it in a better way than just trying to recite poetry in front of everyone. No one wanted to do that.
Some kids would love reciting poetry in front of people, and you're not taking that away. You're just giving a different avenue for kids who need something different to feel interested.
Yeah, and think this was a long time ago, too, when we were doing these. We did, one of my first lesson plans was Tableau with Makey Makey, which was where you just actually built a foot stomp to take a picture of yourself, and you did Tableau.
Different to
act out a scene. So like you were doing the first, you know, you're doing the Cyclops scene of the Odyssey, and you would all do your tableau for.
That is so cool. Yeah. Yeah. And I realize I forgot a really important question. If anyone who's listening is not familiar with Makey Makey, can you tell us? I probably should have done this first. Can you give us a quick overview of Makey Makey?
We're just gonna restitch this whole.
Yeah, I can edit this earlier if we need to.
Makey Makey is a circuit board that allows you to digital duct tape the world to your computer. So you can take like a banana and play a piano because you have a piano app on your computer. Or if you have a camera app, you can build a switch that allows you to take photos. It's basically essentially pressing the space key on your computer or click to take the photo. So it just feels like magic.
It really does.
And in the Kickstarter video, you know, they have a cat that's standing on a little pad and it drinks some water. And when the cat drinks water, it takes a photo with the MacBook because it's just using click. So basically they just have the mouse hovered over click, the cat licks the water, and it takes a little self-portrait of the kitty cat. So it feels magical. And it's still, 10 years later, it still feels magical.
Oh, yeah. Makey Makey was, I think, my first foray into physical computing.
Yeah.
And it really helped me to fall in love with physical computing. I love all different forms of technology, but as a person who likes to make things and who's kind of quirky and artsy and outside of the box, for me, it's the building and the turning physical devices into computers.
Well, I started with Arduino, which was really hard and really challenging when you have no engineering background at all. And I thought it was so complicated, but I was so proud of myself when I got it. Like, I made buttons play like the baseball song. What's that baseball song?
Charge!
I could do that. And I was like, this is so cool. I was like, but this took me like 3 hours. And so then when I did finally get, I actually was really funny. I'd seen the banana piano video. And it was actually not the original one. I saw Jay's brother, Bo, playing a banana xylophone.
Ooh.
And he's playing a banana xylophone. It's a really big, like 88 keys, but it's big. And he takes a moment and he like sets down a banana and then he picks it up and he eats it to like play the last note or something. And it just cracked me up so hard. I was like, this thing is cool. I have to get a grant for this. So I didn't get them in the beginning because I actually got Arduino and Hummingbird, surprisingly. And then I got the Makey Makey. I do love Hummingbird. It was one of my first forays into it because it was much easier than Arduino.
Yes.
The coding was simpler and the wiring process was better.
Yes.
And so what happened for me was then I did Makey Makey, but I still didn't really understand all the circuit stuff that went along with like the way you would do an Arduino project or Hummingbird even. And breadboarding made no sense to me.
Yeah.
So I got into paper circuits with Chibitronics.
Yeah.
And I got, I think I was here at South By. I'm pretty sure it was South By or TCA, but I was here and I did some paper circuits with the Chibitronic stuff with Randy from Seguin ISD. And then I got the little circuit notebooks. I got like 20 of them for my middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And I had an after school club for circuit girls. And we all did circuits together, so we learned together. So my big thing through all of that, you know, time a few years ago now, was I was learning all of it too, right? Mm-hmm. I was learning how to make stuff. I didn't know how to do this stuff. I might have a creative background, but I didn't know how to do Arduino. I didn't know how to code. I had not used Scratch. I literally learned Scratch and then taught people how to use it like 2 weeks later, you know? So it was just that I was just absorbing all this new stuff. And when I did the paper circuits, actually, with the girls, some of them were better than me. Like, they were, like, making tracks that went over things. And I was like, how are you doing that?
So humbling, right?
Yeah, they, like, understood insulation in this way that I didn't understand. And I was like, that's so cool. And they made these really great things. And it was, I really wish I could go back to that time. Like, you can never get that time back where you're learning along with children. It was great. And it made them so excited because some of them were more of an expert than me.
Oh my gosh. It's so empowering to be like this adult that I look up to and that I love. I'm teaching them something new. I'm bringing something valuable to the table.
It was really great. So then we bought, I found out about sewing circuits and I was like, oh, I want a new sewing circuit. So we bought all the sewing stuff. And then I actually ended up working at a high school and I think we changed the name. I thought we changed the name from something else to from Circuit Girls to something else, but now I can't remember. But we were doing sewing circuits and I found like, wow, like now we have to learn to sew and we have to learn how you have to learn those circuit traces to like make a little, we were using Lily Twinkle. So like to make Lily Twinkle work, which is a pre-programmed sensor and board. So like it just does this really pretty twinkly light thing.
I've never worked with that. Now I want to.
It's really cool. And I mean, it's not hard. You sew like 4 positive inputs and then you have to do your negative inputs to everything.
Mm-hmm.
But that is like not something people are learning. They're not learning it in even in their like robotics, whatever class. They're not learning these complicated circuit kind of electrical engineering stuff. So, that was like this paper circuits and the sewing circuits are actually what made me fully understand everything and kind of understand how to use Arduino more than wires and breadboarding. So it kind of became this like, it made me just feel like I had a superpower. I could suddenly make anything. I understood so much more. And that was around the time, that was around the time we wrote the Big Book of Makerspace Projects. So we made a chapter about paper circuits using G's Chibitronics. And my husband did these cute illustrations for little drawings for cards that kids could make. And then, we did the Makey Makey book. And it's crazy. It's got crazy projects in it. I still haven't seen people do some of the craziest projects. But I will say... I will say what's been really cool lately is some, I guess kids have been buying the book lately because kids are on my Scratch account now saying, hey, I have your book.
Ah!
And, hey, I made this project. And it's really kind of cute. And the other day when I was at Emphasis, this is the part when you're not in the classroom anymore. You miss the kids. You get sad.
Yeah.
The other day when I was at Emphasis, we were touring the library at Arizona State or Arizona University. And one of the other people had brought their children. And she told me later, she was like, hey, when we left, my son was like, Mom, that's the Makey Makey lady.
Yeah.
He recognized me. I was like, oh, that's so cute. And
I'll have him do your intro next time. It's the Makey Makey lady.
The Makey Makey lady. And then I had ambassadors in Iraq doing one of my light up circuit projects like the next day after I made it. And I was like, this is so cool. Like, I may not be in the classroom and seeing the joy on the face of the kids, but... on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
There's a kid doing something, a project, an idea that I like lit a spark that their teacher used for them. And that's so cool.
Oh yeah. It's bittersweet to step outside of that immediate connection to the classroom and to kids and to know that you're having the bigger connection, but you don't necessarily get to feel it in the same way.
Yeah.
And do you have any advice for teachers that are looking to get started with these kinds of creative projects, especially those that might be daunted by the technology aspect, other than maybe don't start with Arduino? Maybe start with Makey Makey or Hummingbird or something a little more user-friendly.
Well, I think
scaffolding.
My advice is the same as it was before, which is jump right in. Don't be afraid to learn with the kids. So, like, if you're doing something new, don't feel like you have to learn it and then do it with the kids. Bring it out and say, hey, you know, not third grade, but when you're like in middle school, you know, middle school or high school, you can bring out a tool. And I'm sorry, third grade, you probably can do it too.
I've done it with third
grade.
I take it back. And kindergarten. You can, but it's different.
But I'm just saying for those teachers that are skeptical, maybe they don't want to start in third grade. But if you bring out a tool and you're like, hey, I just got this cool thing and I don't know much about it, let's learn about it together. Kids love doing that. And they still love doing that, you know. That's that advice. If they want to get in this like world where they're creating stuff and being more creative, I think you just have to like know that no idea is dumb. Like, ideas are not dumb. And don't berate yourself. Try stupid. Beep. Make stupid beep. There you go.
Good
make
cover.
Stupid stuff and you know it's okay, and if it doesn't work, that's great. Like, why doesn't it work? Because that's when you're gonna learn. When you figure out why it doesn't work, that's when you go, oh, this doesn't work because, you know, I don't have a negative trace, I don't have something grounding my circuit. That's mm-hmm. why this doesn't work. I need to do it again. Or, oh, I forgot I commented this line out, and now that code isn't being read by the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I always tell the kids is, you know, a computer is only as smart as its programmer.
Oh, yeah.
So if you forget something, the computer's going to forget it too. And that's okay. It's a great learning moment. I think that's the last bit of advice, is that as frustrating and awful as those moments feel when you've spent 2 hours trying to debug whatever is wrong, the sense of euphoric amazingness that happens when you figure it out, you can't replicate that.
And it's sweeter when you've struggled along the way.
It's so wonderful. It's so wonderful. That's what I'm saying. Like, get through the frustration, because learning from your mistake is magical.
Oh, yeah. And as librarians, I think we are trained to know that the search query that you start with is not going to be the search query that you end with. You start with what you think is your research question, and then you kind of follow the berry picking model, and you end up with a query that's completely different and that gets you different information. And that is a tough learning process for teachers and for students, is the project and idea that I start with is very likely not going to be the project and idea that I end with, because it might not be possible, or I might have to edit it, or I might have different materials than I expected, or maybe I designed it so it was too tall and it was going to fall over. But being willing to be like, this was my vision, and now my vision is changing and it's getting better.
Yeah.
I guess that's just something you have to get used to.
Yeah. I think revising, like in English life, revising was the hardest thing to get kids to do.
Oh yeah.
And it's still true in a library with a search query or mm-hmm. with a project they want to do. And I think revising is the same as iterating.
Oh yeah.
It is the same as looking at your first draft or your first iteration of a robot. They are the same, and sometimes you have to be able to pivot. And so I think that's that other learning from that kids don't want to do, but a lot of humans don't want to do. Mm-hmm. We don't want to pivot. We don't want to revise. I made the first thing. I'm Jack Kerouac. I typed the whole thing on one roll of paper. It's great as it is. I don't need to do anymore. So, you know, we're all like that, and learning that you can revise and it makes it even cooler and even better, I think, is a skill we have to teach them.
That's something I mentioned in my session the other day. Why robotics at school? Because iteration is necessary.
Yeah.
So if you've got a kid that doesn't want to edit, that's not really an option when you're working with robotics.
You gotta do it.
Got to edit. Yes. Yeah. Okay, now it's time for my real favorite question.
Okay.
She said about every question. But Colleen, what makes you a flocking amazing educator?
Oh my gosh. I'm not good at, like, I was really good at talking about all the other stuff. I'm not going to be good at this question.
Every teacher I've ever interviewed has said, I'm not going to be good at this question. And that's why I love asking it. Because as educators, we need to talk ourselves up more. We need to see what we're doing that's amazing.
You're right. I think that for me, I feel like education is a constant source of revision. Mm. Like, I'm constantly revising what I do. I went and taught to third grade last week. And the very first... we did the dolly lesson where we made a dolly out of scrap parts. I actually gave them all brown bags with like I gave them brown bags with conductive and non-conductive things in it, and was like, you're going to build a little robot, and then we're going to make it talk. We're going to give it life, like Frankenstein.
Ooh.
And they were like, oh, this is so cool. But we didn't have time to do the voice and the robot part because, you know, class times are short. So then I was like, well, next class, I'm going to do the audio recording first and then build the robot, which really makes no sense because you got to build the robot first. But, you know, you just try things.
Yeah.
Like I said, don't be afraid to try stupid things. What I learned in my life as this constant revisionist in, maybe that word is not the right word, but as someone who constantly changes what they're doing to adapt to what kids want to learn.
You're evolving.
Yeah, evolving. What I've learned is that kids see that. And they hear you modeling the process, and then they learn to do it too.
Oh.
And so my, I always thought, like, wow, I always felt bad for my first period students because they had the first lesson. And then
like
by
the
last lesson, it was so great and tweaked and tuned in. So I always felt bad for them. But what I learned was that they were actually the smartest group because they heard me going like, oh, well, this isn't going to work. Now we have to do this next class. I'm going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they understood that all that adaptability was like something that made me, you know, made our class work. But I think the real thing is that I really care about my kids. I still care about my kids. I still go get coffee with some kids I taught a long time ago. In fact, Isaac, We still have to go on our coffee date that COVID disrupted.
Oh, shout out to Isaac waiting patiently for his coffee date.
3 years later. yeah, but we still keep in touch, and you know, I love my kids. I always said once you're with Miss Graves, you get. I'm gonna take you to the grave. That sounds bad. I had some you're mine forever. Maybe I told them to take what I taught them to the grave. That probably makes more sense.
It sounds like you have a really great mix of humility and confidence and passion. Yeah. And that's such an interesting line walking between the humility to revise and to realize that you don't know everything and the confidence to be like, yeah, I messed up and I'm still amazing. Like, this wasn't great, but that doesn't mean that I'm not great. And I feel like that is a tough balance for people to reach, especially in a field like education, which isn't always forgiving of mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to meet certain criteria that are sometimes they feel impossible to meet.
For sure.
So giving yourself the space and the time to try things out can be really tricky.
Yeah. And that's like the key thing to do is time. Mm-hmm. Give yourself time to learn a new tool. Give yourself time to learn how to do something amazing. And that's what makes you flocking amazing. Because even in my job at Makey Makey, when I start to make new content and I'm like, I'm kind of tired of doing these things. And like, then I bought a Cricut machine and I started making all kinds of new projects that were totally different.
Mm.
Like, learning a new tool can really broaden your creative confidence.
Yeah. And can kind of invigorate you a little bit if you're feeling stuck too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have some ideas for taking Hummingbird and Makey Makey and working together. So if you are interested in Hummingbird and Makey Makey together, let us know what you'd like to see, because we've got some ideas.
I wanted to make the wah 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 wah. It was the air horn. Air horn sound.
I wish I had that ready on my phone. Before we finish up, Colleen, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know or that you want to share? Any cool projects that you have coming up?
Oh my gosh, if you haven't been to the Makey Makey site in a while, you should go, because we've been building new apps. We've been creating new projects. We have these new backpacks that go on Makey Makey. So on your original board, it kind of expands the way you use it. So
cool.
Like, we have new stuff. It's cool. And every time, I really literally have never met anyone who has gone and gone, oh yeah, I've seen all this. Like, there's always new stuff, because we're constantly trying to evolve the Makey Makey ecosystem. So check it out.
Awesome. And we will link all of that in our resources. We will link your social media to this post so you can share and people can find you. Thank you so much for your time. I know you have a million meetings today and everything is so busy, and I really appreciate you coming to chat with me.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yay. Well, listeners, thank you for joining us for Flocking Amazing, the podcast for quick, bite-sized conversations with real teachers sharing their real expertise and providing real inspiration to us all. We'll have a new teacher conversation dropping soon, so don't flocking miss it.